Liz Kennedy back here from Newport.
Are you going to bring her up, or do you want her? Where do you want her?
She would prefer to be back.
Open the Senate Revenue Committee for March 2nd, the day after Paul Warner's birthday. So today, committee, what we'll do is tee up or get ready with Senate Bill 480, which is the VCI tax amnesty program. The goal was to have it ready to go through it today, keep us all, get all our questions answered and make sure it's all the words are correct, and then go on Friday. But Paul just got the amendment, and we just got the amendment just now, and so that may or may not happen. We want to make sure we've got everything right, and we've got to get the dates put into the bill. So the goal would still be Friday, since we're going to do a big public hearing. That'd be a good day to move something, but we'll see on that. And then the second bill is something that we'll just come back to, Senate Bill 32. So it should be a relatively, I think we'll be done at by 15 after 9 if we hurry. Senator George, you have a job shadow.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Seated in the back is Elizabeth Kennedy from Newburgh. And she is good friends with my daughter-in-law, who substitutes in the area. So good to have her with me. She's going to be here all day long, and I'll run her back to Newburgh at 3 o'clock before I go back to Corvallis for a meeting tonight.
Oh, wow. So you're going to go to Newburgh and then up to Corvallis.
That's right. She's worth it. I'm going to make sure get her home safely.
Well, welcome, Elizabeth. It's kind of exciting. We've had a number of job shadows in the last couple of days. So we'll be interested to hear your thoughts on the work that we're up to or not up to. So let's open a work session on Senate Bill 480, and Paul, let's walk through these amendments and see where we're at.
Mr. Chair, the Dash 1 amendments reflect the discussion of the committee. The first portion of it, about the first 17 pages of it, are the Voluntary Compliance Initiative. And this really borrows extensively on the language from House Bill 2486, which you heard from Representative McPherson had drafted. So it does use a lot of that same language in terms of what's an abusive tax shelter. It includes those that are clearly defined, the listed transactions under the IRS. It also gives the Department of Revenue some additional rulemaking authority to determine these non-economic transactions. It imposes a 20% per transaction penalty, and it requires the promoters to register. I believe there's a blank in the bill in terms of what the penalty would be for further promoter activity, but we'll have to go through the details with you on what the bill does. The other portion of the bill is the general amnesty, and the general amnesty is set up. As the chair pointed out, that their dates are blank in that, so we've kind of we need direction on that and discussion with the department in terms of their resource management. There is an additional post-amnesty penalty of 25%, and there is an allowance for non-filers to come in during this period and not be subject to penalties or interest. And then there is for those that are already assessed to come in and have their penalties waived, but not interest. So what I've tried to do, based on that discussion that the committee had and those underlying assumptions, I've put together a spreadsheet for you to look at. It's titled Senate Bill 480 Preliminary Revenue Impact Numbers. Again, these are emphasized preliminary because they're really based on this conceptual discussion rather than going through the actual Dash 1 amendment. I think as we've talked throughout this process, you can really see this bill in two segments. I mean, either one could be a standalone bill. The first is the VCI and the revenue impact from there. What I've done is tried to get to a gross amount. I call that tax shelter back taxes. And that is an estimate for the gross amount of revenue that would come in. And I apologize, I don't have millions written there, but these are all in millions. What I've done is calculated or estimated a $16.9 million in revenue that would come in through a voluntary compliance initiative. This is based on the California experience. First thing I did, as you recall, California, during their VCI period, $1.3 billion came in. And interesting, there's only 2,100 returns. So it was over 600,000 per return, so a huge amount per return. The first thing I did was delete all of the those that came in under appeal, because this bill does not allow appeal rights, and we felt that was very uncertain. So we took 25% of that total amount as a starting base. From there, I shared down that number, which would be about 300 some million, shared that down based on the income tax collections in Oregon versus California, which is pretty close to 10 to 1. And then I also made an adjustment for the sensitivity and the importance of capital gains in California's economy during the boom period up to the year 2000. I did that based on a 2-to-1 assumption. If a report came out following the 2000 fiscal year from the Department of Finance in California that estimated that nearly 25% of their income tax revenue was due to capital gains, we estimated during that time that 12% were in Oregon. So that was my final adjustment for the relative importance of capital gains and the incentive for these abusive tax shelters. So those three elements, deleting those that had appealed, scaling down for the size factor, and then scaling down further for the relative importance of capital gains in California versus Oregon. And that leads me to that $16.9 million. I then talked to the Department of Revenue. They said that they had been in contact with California and looked at tax returns there with shared information, and they had identified what they thought was $5.2 million in abusive tax shelter revenue. So I assumed that that would be collected whether this law passed or not. So I subtracted that out as a normal collection. There is additional penalties in there. I just took a proportion of the 16.9 and assumed that the department would be, through increased enforcement activities in the future, would be bringing in some of those dollars, and they'd be getting 20% per transaction. And that, as you notice, goes on through the next two biennia. So the net revenue from the VCI, my estimate is $12.2 million, and then $1 million in 07 and 09 and 09 and 11 through the penalties. Now, the general amnesty is it's more complicated, but it also has better information. I mean, I've got a lot more states to look at so I do have more to go on than the experience of California. What I looked at and thought was the most relevant was an 02 amnesty in Michigan. And the Michigan amnesty, because it's so recent, but it also the way they broke the data down. They had it very, very well detailed and very clearly divided between non-filers and those that were already assessed. And we wanted to make sure we made that distinction when we looked at the potential revenue sources, because the long-run implications are quite different, those two groups, as you talked about. In terms of the non-filers, I shared down from the Michigan experience. They had a little over 60,000 returns from non-filers, and scaling that down to Oregon size would have been about 13,518 returns. And I used the Michigan average, which was 1243 per return. So one of the things to keep in mind, that these are not taxpayers, these are returns. And in Michigan, they average 3 returns per filer. So you're getting returns based on back years. The returns for the revenue from these non-filers basically is the 13,518 times 1243 per. I then assume that 65% of these non-filers stay in the system. So we get the 3.6 out there in 07, 09, and 09, 11 as an ongoing positive revenue. I've assumed that a certain proportion of those non-filers would be caught, and the Department of Revenue would track them down, and that's $2.8 million per year in penalties and interest that they didn't pay because the department tracked them down and they had to pay in addition. Of course, the raw numbers would cancel out. In terms of the post-amnesty penalties, I've assumed that a certain proportion is caught in the future, and then the 25% post-amnesty penalties apply. Remember, we've got this, if you don't file for 3 years, you get 100% penalty. After this bill is in effect, you'd have 125%. So that's that additional ongoing revenue. So that's a plus. Then the other component, this is in terms of the revenue from the non-filers, this is, for the long run, clearly the most important revenue in terms of long-term gains to the revenue system. However, it's the most uncertain to try and estimate. I mean, we know there's a huge potential out there, but it's very difficult to assess how many will come in under a program like this. The second portion there, the calculation, is on revenue from those already assessed. And again, I use the Michigan data to look at the ratio of non-filers to those assessed. It's about 3-1. So on an amnesty, you get about 75% of the returns would be from those already assessed, and 25% those non-assessed. I've assumed that revenue is distributed over two biennia, and that's something that would be subject to how this is laid out. Now it is, the department has discretion on the installment program, and presumably people would want to spread this out. So I've estimated about $50 million in gross revenue, and assumed about two-thirds of that, or three-fifths of that, would come in the current biennium, the remainder in 07-09. Penalties are foregone for these individuals. The penalty to dollars assessed ratio is about one-third, 37%. So I use that proportion based on our current data. And then the foregone revenue is the dollars that the department would have collected if this bill hadn't passed. And one thing you'll notice is, if you look at the foregone revenue, which adds up to almost, I think it's 49.9, and then the revenue from the assessed is 50.4. So nearly all of the revenue of those that are assessed, we assume, would come in without the bill. But what you've done through this process is speed up the collection. And that's general consensus of what an amnesty does, is it speeds up the collection for those that are already in the system. So you get an adjustment there in terms of that foregone revenue spread out over a longer period of time. So the net revenue from the amnesty is about $9 million for 05, 07. But notice it's negative for 07, 09 because this revenue would have come in more slowly through those that are assessed. So if you look at the overall impact estimate for Senate Bill 480, it would be the 12.2 plus the 9, which is 21.2 for revenue in the 05-07 biennium. 07-09, it actually has a negative impact because of the speed-up effect of minus 5.2, and then it has about a $500,000 increase out in 09-11. So the impact is largely in the 05-07 biennium, and the biggest dollar amounts is in the speed-up of the amnesty, but you'd get our estimates, a net increase of about 21 million.
So, Paul, what dates did you base this on for 05-07?
I based it on the assumption that you would have an amnesty in place within 9 to 12 months after the session.
9 to 12 months.
Yeah, so it would be something that would be done within the next year, within the first fiscal year of the biennium.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's an issue for the department in terms of their resource management, and in particular, the issue of whether these could be run concurrently.
Mm-hmm. Let's do the dates now and make sure we fill in those blanks. Committee, you remember we were trying to pick the right dates, and I forget, I think it was Senator George, you had mentioned September could we have it up, do it September of this year or October of this year?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, I took the question back, and the VCI, the tax shelter piece, we could do perhaps later this fall, say November through January. We're looking at that as being primarily a manual process, not requiring new programming and not requiring significant resources. The general amnesty piece, we could not do in the summer of 05. We are bringing up a new, totally new name and address program that is going to take all of our resources. We're actually going to have to shut down our processing for a period of time to bring that up. So we wouldn't have the resources to do that. Then we're getting into the processing season next year. So probably it would be July of 06 through August or September, July to October 1, that would be a workable time frame for the general amnesty piece. We did talk with some folks in California about their experience and whether they would recommend running these simultaneously, and they didn't recommend that. They said they thought that would be problematic. I know Paul mentioned the issue about someone coming in during amnesty who could have come in during a VCI program, and then we would hit them with all of these penalties. They had not seen that happen there, so that might be less of a concern for the committee. But those are the time periods that we would be able to operate that.
Okay, so your recommendation is November through January of 05 and July through October of 06.
We think those would be doable, Mr. Chair. If you want to move the VCI up a month or so, that might also be something that could work. That
October through. Well, I've always thought 3 months. Committee questions or thoughts for Ms. Buchanan?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know when you want me to address other issues with the amendment, but I'm happy to do that now or later.
Go, please.
Okay, I did just see it this morning, so yeah. I apologize if I'm saying things that are in there. It looks like with the general amnesty on page 18 of the amendment that it applies only to tax years starting January 1, 2002. And I believe that should apply just for amended returns, that for non-filers, it would be any year for which they have not filed a return. And I didn't see that, but perhaps it's somewhere else.
The impact, revenue impact is based on that.
On amended returns. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, on amended returns only for the three-year period that the non-filers would be extended beyond that.
Okay.
For any year for which a person has not filed a return, perhaps even 1975, they would be able to come in under this. So that would be a question. And if that is done, then our assumption would be that you want the penalty enhancement only to apply to amended returns and, I'm sorry, to non-filers who fail to come in during the amnesty period. And the reason I say that is if a person has filed a return and underreported their income, and now they're making an amended return to correct that.
Hey Dexter. Since we're doing the amendment, are you free to stay with us?
And sure.
Because we're talking about the amendment, and you're the man. Okay, please, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
That's all right, Mr. Chair. If the penalty enhancement applies to any person who could have amended the return and paid more tax during the amnesty period, then the result will be that when we receive an amended return for a person who made an honest mistake on the return, this penalty enhancement will apply. If we receive a Federal Revenue Agent report that says we've adjusted the return and they owe more tax, the penalty enhancement will apply. Those people will not have understood or even thought that they should be applying for an amnesty because they didn't realize that they had underreported their income. So if you want the penalty enhancement, it probably makes more sense to apply that only to non-filers who should have come in during the amnesty period and filed their returns.
And that was, a discussion we had a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
And the only other thing is very minor to you, I'm sure, but on page 22 the language provides that the enhanced penalty is going to apply to unpaid tax and interest, and our programmers will look at that and go ballistic, because that's going to require a lot of programming, I'm sure, is what they would tell me. So if you could have that only apply to the tax, which is how other penalties are imposed now. It's only the tax amount that has additional penalty. And then if you want the effect of imposing it on tax and interest both, you might make the penalty larger. So a 30% penalty applying only to tax rather than a 25% penalty applying to tax plus interest.
Okay. Well, we don't want your agents ballistic. So what line is that?
That's on line 1 through 3 on page 22.
We don't want him to go postal on this one.
Postal, that was the word. Thank you.
It's early.
That's all I saw with a quick skim of the amendment.
Okay, but continue to look it over. So, Dexter, we've kind of come up with three or four changes. Committee, other thoughts? I mean, we have the dates. We had to fill in the blanks on the dates, which we came up with, or it looks like. For the VCI, October through January and of 05, and the amnesty, the general amnesty, July through October of 06.
Mr. Chair, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. The reason I wandered into the room, I just wanted to remind you that you can't have an emergency clause on this bill, so October might be,
gotta be 91 days.
Cutting it close.
Well, I mean, and there we go again. We think June is the magic date. Okay, so that won't work. Maybe we need the 91 days.
November through January.
Mm-hmm. We've got to have it 90 days after session. When session can end.
Well, we're going to be out of here by the end of June.
Well, July, August,
crystal ball.
October. Well, then we'd be fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But let's set October or November 1st through January 31st.
Just
okay.
Vice Chair says November.
Mr. Chair, that's November through when?
Well, 3 months.
Okay. January 31st.
Through January, yeah.
Till Super Bowl.
Maybe
March.
Thanksgiving special and right into Christmas and the after Christmas sale.
Keep in mind that you know, I think we're looking at, in terms of this VCI, a much smaller number of taxpayers with a bigger amount per return, much bigger amount, but a smaller number. It's the general amnesty where you have the bigger participation than the smaller dollar amount.
No, yeah, it's a much more work.
Yeah, it's probably more work on the fiscal side.
Mm-hmm. Deborah, if you could continue to look it over. Our goal again is Friday, and so Dexter, I don't know how that does with you, but that continues to be our goal. Would be Friday if we've got everything correct. Other questions for this panel, and before we bring up another panel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Dexter, for all of your work. Jim, you wanted Craven.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association. I am so far over my head at this moment that it's scary, but all I wanted to do today was relay to you that I just a couple days ago have gotten some concerns from my fellow members down in California about some of what people are arguing are some of the unintended consequences of the way the California program of general amnesty is working out. I have shared three pages of almost indecipherable issues with your staff and with Deborah Buchanan, and they generally come down to the issue of filers who could have availed themselves of amnesty but didn't, and then being subject to post-amnesty penalties. And these are not non-filers or scofflaws or people who are avoiding the law. These are people who have an amended return or a legitimate dispute or an issue or contested case, And evidently, there is they are going back to rework some of the language in the California Assembly to address some of these issues. And all I wanted to do today is not slow down this train. And I think I heard some things from Deborah that probably addressed the concerns I'm raising. I just wanted to put a mark down so I don't wind up in the House Revenue Committee saying, being asked, did you testify in the Senate, and have to say no. I will work with your staff and with my members in California to straighten this out. I hope it's not an issue, but I just kind of wanted to put this marker down. I don't really have specifics to share with you or suggest to you today, but it comes down to, I think, that issue. Not the non-filers, not the people who have, you know, avoided the law, but people who have had an issue or an issue that has come up in the post-amnesty period, a legitimate issue. I think I just heard some of that being addressed by Deborah Buchanan, and being subject to post-amnesty penalties because they didn't come forward during the amnesty period because they didn't know they should. So that's all I'm saying today, and hopefully we'll work all this out. I just want to put a little marker down, and I'll continue to work on it, but I'm not asking you to slow the bill down or not move it out Friday. So I'd appreciate that.
Thanks, Jim. And you're comfortable, Dennis. It sounds like you're comfortable. We'll work with you to, as we move forward, to ensure that cases like that, at least we've taken into account in this legislation.
My hope, Mr. Chair, is that someone tells me I have nothing to worry about this bill and I can go work on other things, because it is kind of thorny stuff, and I appreciate the committee taking this on. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, one of the things that Dexter and I did talk about, and it's not in the amendment, but something the committee may want to consider, would be to give the department director discretion in these types of cases where the department determines that this is due to a legitimate dispute rather than avoiding tax responsibilities.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I mean, from what I've heard, I didn't think this would really be an issue, because if they're in the system working with the department, then, I mean, it's not like anyone's hiding anything. They're not filing. They're actually in that process, and it would seem like they should already have that discretion to work through that. But, I mean, I'm more than willing to put that in if that makes it more clear. But I thought what we're doing is really going after people who weren't coming forward and giving them that opportunity to actually complain.
Or intentionally, the VCI intentionally kind of skating on the edges where there really is no edge. But I would be happy, I mean, if we learn just from the California experience that folks are getting included, if we needed to put something in, perhaps on the House side, since Friday is our goal, that said the director had discretion, or I'm sure Jim's folks could bring language that they feel might take into account folks that really were doing everything they were supposed to, and somehow they didn't think they were going to have to be a part of the VCI or an amnesty program, and then they got hit with a penalty. I'm happy to look at any language that would address that beyond just giving the director the ability to say, well, that's not really what this law was intended to.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, because and this three-page memo that I just got and shared with your staff, we may be talking apples and oranges here. There may be fundamental differences in the way California's language is written and the way they're applying it compared to how we plan to do it here. And it is, I'm not trying to create an artificial issue. It's just, this just got brought to my attention about 48 hours ago, and I'm trying to wrestle with it, and I just wanted to put a marker down. I didn't want to go testify on the House side on a bill and not have said anything here and blindside people. So that's my only point in coming forward today. I appreciate the time.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else before we close this work session? And please feel free to look through the amendments, committee members. If there's anything else that we feel should be included, if we could get those in as soon as possible, that would be helpful.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, yeah, please, Senator George.
Paul, I'm on page 8 of the amendments, section 12, line 14. It says the penalty should be imposed on the person who promotes a tax shelter, as is, you know, described under 6700 Internal Revenue Code. And then down in line 25 and 26, it says the amount of the penalty should be equal 100% of the gross income derived by that person promoting that tax shelter. What I want to know, is it possible that anyone could, in fact, be operating a shelter like that and not understand that they were, in fact, violating the 6700 of Internal Revenue Code? Because that just seems like one severe penalty for somebody who might just make a mistake. You think that that's not the case?
Well, you know, I think the intent here, Senator George, is that any dollars you made from that transaction were not legitimately earned. Therefore, you're basically sacrificing the dollars you earned from that particular transaction. So that's where the 100% comes from. You know, I think that the level of understanding among promoters certainly should be much higher now, based on the California experience, the IRS, and so given the fact that it is under the IRS code, that I think that's the intent there.
So your belief is then that anybody who might be promoting this thing should have had a warning shot fired across the bow, trying to get this thing straight and get it legal. And that when they get with 100% penalty, they won't be able to say, gee, I didn't know. I thought we were operating legally.
Well, you know, the penalty is equal to the amount of money that they made off the deal. Yeah. That's what it amounts to. Okay. So if you made $5,000 from this transaction, then you owe $5,000.
Sure.
So you owe the total amount that you made. Yeah. So that's the intent, that you don't make any net gain off of it.
Right.
Deborah, can you see any promotion that might be where the promoter just simply did not know that they were engaged in promoting an illegal tax shelter? Have we seen any evidence? If you're going to talk, you have to come, but you can shake your head from there.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. I would be surprised by that, Mr. Chair. It's the people who are setting up these products have a pretty good understanding of what they're doing, and I'd be surprised that that would be the case. But
okay, so you would be, Jody, do you want to get in on this before we close the work session?
Jody Wise, a taxpayer in Oregon. I'm sorry Dell isn't here today because he understands this more clearly than I. But evidently what is now happening with some of these transactions is that the sellers are saying, no, you give me your $1 million, and if my deal doesn't fly and the IRS and the state of Oregon comes after you, I'll give you your $1 million back. Which means that then the taxpayer, not the state of Oregon, gets that money. And so he would recommend that the wording be such that we get $1 million whether they've returned it to the taxpayer, that amount to the taxpayer, or not, because otherwise they're not getting penalized for being in the business of selling tax shelters. And that's that generally is the fee. When I talked with South Carolina, all of their taxpayers had paid either $750,000 or $1 million for the tax advice that they got. And so he just would change the wording such, and he could probably provide language that would do it, that would say instead of their gross, it would say the amount of their original charge or something like that.
Well, if he wants to fax to LRL or to Paul,
okay,
language, we could... Yeah. Send it around to all the members and have them take a look at.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Brzezinski.
You said that the fee that they're getting is $750,000 to $1 million to give this advice?
Yes.
I think I'm in the wrong business.
Yes. I think that's why Deborah Buchanan said, no, these people know what they're doing. Some of them have gone to jail, and they go in there and they think of new ideas,
yeah.
You know. We pay for their keep while they do it.
They got their offshore account waiting, investing, and getting dividends.
The press the last 2 days have articles about a taxpayer from Washington, D.C. that the IRS caught, and he owes $210 million in taxes because he had been sheltering his income. He claims to have done it all on his own and he had no advisors. I haven't read this, so I'm not sure if I understood what you were saying, Paul. But I think you said that there are no penalties. And I'd like to see you revisit the question of whether you want to keep some penalties for people who have used these shelters. You know, the what's happening with Greg and Mark's bills is they were thinking that they were keeping all penalties on the abusive tax shelter, and just being the only carrot was you wouldn't get the new penalties, and that's not what's been done across the country when we've had any kind of amnesties. Our organization polled ourselves, and without any real facts to base our information on, just kind of gut feelings, it was like, you know, if somebody paid $1 million, they knew they were skirting with the truth. They disappeared probably $35 million worth of income with no business risk except that they would get caught. And they shouldn't get away with no penalty during an amnesty. And the polling of our group said 50%. However, we don't know what normal practice is within the department. And so it seemed like it'd be helpful to have some information about what's normal. If they came in during a non-amnesty period and they said, you know, I bought this abusive tax shelter and I'm turning myself in, what would the department normally do? Because if the department would normally give up all penalties, then I guess we better, in our amnesty, give up all penalties, so nobody will come forward during our amnesty. But if they would normally say, okay, here's the interest, here's the penalties you owe, then they would, then our amnesty would look attractive. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, oh dear, it slipped. It's not coming to me. Amnesty. What's the other one? Paul, what's
amnesia.
The other one?
That's called amnesia, not amnesty.
Yes. you're keeping your penalties. I've forgotten what the other one is. It'll come to me.
It's a good one.
And I'll communicate it when it does.
Right. Great. Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, I know.
Mr. Chair, the way that the VCI is set up is, as I described, you look on page 10, lines 8 through, lines 4 through 8. Line 4 says that if you come forward and pay in full all taxes and interest with respect to each return in compliance with subsection 1 of this section, all penalties that would otherwise be imposed shall be waived. So it does waive penalties for those that come forward during this VCI period, and then following the VCI period imposes the 20% abusive tax shelter penalty per transaction.
So, committee, and that was, I remember the discussion, and that's just where we came down. We can revisit that and put a penalty, but we... The earlier discussion was we decided if folks came forward during the VCI voluntarily and said, I would like that we would waive the penalty, I was open then, I'm open now. If we want to put a small penalty in there, I see both sides of this. I see the value in saying to that person, if you come to us now, we'll just work with you without penalty and getting you back in line. I also see the value of at least some nominal... I don't think I could go for 50% or even 20%, but some nominal penalty to say you were outside the boundaries of Oregon law. It's, I guess, the will of the committee on this one. Anyone have strong feelings? If we put a small penalty in, does that give anyone angst?
Senator George wants to say.
Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, the person with the $35 million bucks, who obviously knows what they're doing, but we've all heard or known, had friends who attended these seminars, and what they are, their seminars on how to avoid tax, and they get caught up in this, and they honestly believe that this is legitimate, what they're trying to, and you say, no, that cannot be right. And you try to convince them that that's not correct. If they act on that, though, I have a real hard time not allowing that group of people. And maybe it's a dollar value or something. I'm just thinking out loud here. It would allow, above a certain level, hey, assumption is you're smart enough. You got $35 million bucks. You know what you're doing. But the other person who does not, you know, who may have been caught in a lower level may, in fact, just have bought into a very fraudulent scheme. Hmm. Day one. I saw a disagreement down there.
I disagree. I just think that we... I think it's been expressed already. I mean, most people in this state are paying their taxes. They're paying them on time. They're doing what they're supposed to do, and they're following the law. And basically, it's like, are we going to set up an exception for ignorance to the law? And if we're going to do that, why don't we do it in the criminal setting? And to me, I think a small amount, 2%, 3%, something like that, that's even less than what normally occurs, we're giving them a break. But there's still some accountability for when we hear from our constituents and say, hey, I've been paying my fair share for 35 years, mm-hmm. and now you're basically opening the door. I think we're, Senator George, I think we're giving them an opportunity to come clean at less of a penalty than what they normally would receive through the department. And I think that Ms. Wise's group has really brought that home to me, that we need to have some accountability, but not as hard of a slap as they would normally get.
For folks, and maybe that gets, if you do it low enough penalty, in some ways it takes into account the $35 million, which might be an extreme for Oregon, but could be. And if it's $2,000, 2% of $2,000, it's obviously a very small, what, $40, and so that's a small amount to pay. So maybe if you do 2%, at least you have some nominal penalty there, but it mm-hmm. does take into account that 2% of $2 million is a decent amount, but 2% of a couple thousand bucks.
Mr. Chair, when we look on the numbers here in our anticipation, which of course are subject to wide range of error, but we're thinking there probably be like about 500 returns.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's not a huge amount, but it would be, there may be some language. I'll maybe work with the department to see if there's a language to give the director some discretion and a penalty up to some amount, not to exceed a certain percentage. Do something like that.
Okay. You like that? Okay. Senator Starr shaking his head. Does that feel more? Okay. I mean, I'm comfortable with just saying 2%, but maybe this is something I'll query the committee afterwards. Okay. Anything else on Ms. Weiser?
I remembered. Okay. Jenny Weiser, taxpayers, Oregon. So if I heard correctly, Paul, you're saying that this legislation says that we're going to relieve the penalties also on anybody who's already been identified by the system and has... that we've already spent time and energy catching this person and bringing them in, and they already know that they owe us, say they owe us $10,000. And now we're giving them relief from all that, even though we've done the work. And generally speaking, across the country, that is not, as I understand it, what people have done. What they've said is that if we've already sent you a letter saying we're auditing you, you don't get to come forward. We did the work to figure out there's something wrong. We don't do any just automatic audits of every hundredth person who files their tax return. We only do audits of people who we suspect of something. And so I think that, and our group thinks, that if someone has been identified by the state and they've got a letter that said, we're going to audit you, they are not eligible for this. They should have come forward honestly before this point of time. They should have come forward and said, I didn't pay my taxes for the last 5 years and I need to talk about it. And in fact, if they're in that position, they could still come forward between now and when the amnesty begins. But if they wait till the amnesty, they shouldn't. The amnesty should not exclude people who are already in the system for being not good taxpayers.
Thank you.
That's a huge piece of the penalties there.
Anyone else on Senate Bill 480? Okay, so we'll give folks a couple days to look through the amendments and perhaps return to it on Friday, perhaps not. Close the work session on Senate Bill 480 and open a work session on Senate Bill 32. Lizbeth.
Chairman Deckard and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin-Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. So we've heard Senate Bill 32 already once, but it was part of the discussions last time before you started your big tax amnesty bill. So with Senate Bill 32, again, what it does is provides the Department of Revenue the authority to establish rules to waive the penalties on taxpayers for good and sufficient cause that results due to just the incident being the first offense for the taxpayer. So it's specifying the guidelines that are required by the new administrative rules for waiving the penalties for good and sufficient cause. So basically, under current law, Department of Revenue may waive or reduce the taxpayer's tax owed, interest, and penalties assessed, or the total tax up to a tax amount of $50 if the taxpayer can demonstrate good and sufficient cause. But there's not just a good and sufficient cause does not include just a first-time offense because the person didn't know the law. Mm-hmm. So basically, that's what this bill is doing, is trying to provide that additional provision and allow administrative rules to allow the Department of Revenue to waive under these specific conditions. And it really shouldn't have much of a revenue impact. There aren't that many cases each year, so it'll reduce general fund revenues by a minimal amount, less than $50,000 a year. But I think Senator George had talked with Deborah with the Department of Revenue about this bill as far as addressing his issue that he had last time he heard this bill.
I remember the circumstance that you brought up, Senator George. Mm-hmm. Well, Deborah, it seems to me this would get at a case just like the fellow that have worked with you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Metzger.
Well, I also think 32 really kind of answers some of the other questions we just had, especially in line 29 and 30, the actions of the department enhance long-term effectiveness, and that's pretty broad language. I think on your amnesty and the VCI, this provides that type of flexibility. You know, first time offense is the first time the person didn't pay. We think it's more effective to have this person into the system. I mean, I think this may address some of the issues that we just had on the previous bill, if this were to move forward, to provide the flexibility that we were just talking about earlier. So, at least as written, it seems pretty flexible for the department to do things.
Deborah, you agree with that? Seems to me that it would give the kind of flexibility to the director of the department.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Yes, Mr. Chair, I would agree with that, that it would provide us an opportunity to look at a case and the facts in that case, and if we determined it was appropriate to waive the penalty based on those facts, this would authorize us to do that, assuming we have the rules that said that.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a hypothetical what these cases might be? We did have, I mean, Senator George brought up one about a month ago, but what would a case that would fit this?
Current law provides that if a taxpayer files more than 3 years' worth of returns after the due date of the third year, every return is subject to a 100% penalty. If the department has not found the person, so we don't know they haven't filed, and they come forward voluntarily and they file all of those returns and they're handing us a check for the tax and the interest and they would like a waiver of part of that penalty, our rules would probably reflect that we would waive part of the 100% penalty in that case. If we've had to track them down and find them and put in substantial resources to get them to file the return, we would be less likely to waive penalty in that case. That would be the hypothetical, Mr. Chair.
Questions or comments? Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, I think that provides the balance I was looking for.
This bill does.
Yeah, first time under special circumstances with discretion to analyze each case and say, okay, I believe there's some legitimacy in waiving penalties. Others, no. Sorry.
Great. Well, we're in work session, so we can move this one.
Mr. Chair, the other thing I think it sounds like we may want to do is make sure Jim Cravens has knowledge of this bill, because this may address the issues that he was raising regarding the 480. Because if this does give them enough discretion, it seems like under the tax amnesty program, they can use that same discretion. Or do you disagree with that?
Yeah, what a fun.
Mr. Chair, Senator Przanski, the only concern I would have is if we have heard from you that you want these penalties to be applied after an amnesty period, I don't know where we would say we have discretion in those cases to not apply the penalty. For example, if Senate Bill 480 says this penalty will apply if people could have come in and amended their returns and recorded more tax, that is more legislative direction, I think, to have the penalty apply in each case. And perhaps there's not as much justification there to waive the penalty.
Well, it just seems to me that we needed the clarification either in this bill saying it does not apply to the 480, or in the 480 we need to say what does apply.
And my feeling is this should apply. I mean, with the VCI and the amnesty that we're doing, I mean, obviously we're giving clear goals and intent, but I'd like to say this applies to the VCI and to the amnesty, and if we need to amend the bill to do that, Paul just mentioned a good point to me, which is perhaps we would run these together anyway. They would be a nice floor discussion to have both bills back-to-back so that we've covered all our bases in terms of compliance. And so that's, I think you're hearing that unanimously from the committee, is that we'd like this to ensure, 32 ensures that it's connected to the amnesty and the VCI.
Mr. Chair, if that's the direction we had, that you wanted us to use our discretion in waiving that additional 25% penalty, then we would act on that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brzezinski.
I mean, I understand a member of Deborah coming in saying that this is one of the things they didn't want to have, quote unquote, a lot of discretion because they wanted to make sure they met with the intent. But it seems to me, based on our discussion that we're having now, that's part of the record, that we are actually telling the department, yes, we have these expectations under 480, but you've also heard that there may be a situation that Mr. Cravens has brought up where you have somebody that just kind of falls in that in between, and it's going to be very few in number, and that the department would have the blessing of this body based on 32 to make those discretionary calls on those specific type of cases. I mean, by just setting the record, maybe, even though we're not worrying about what the court's going to think about it, but for the department, it seems like maybe this is clear. Is this, I mean, I want to make certain that the department feels comfortable where we're wanting to go, and that we're not all of a sudden saying, yeah, you have complete discretion and you don't have to really enforce it, because that's not what we're, what I'm hearing we want.
No, I mean, to me, I mean, just to reiterate that, and if us just saying it is helpful, I see this as those rare cases. I think Senator George pointed out one that fit the bill for me, and perhaps, I mean, who knows on Mr. Cravens if those fit the bill or not. But those really are the rare cases where you have someone that just rarely would not fit the intent. And I trust the director of the Department of Revenue to be able to ferret out those very rare cases on the amnesty and the VCI, understanding why we're putting forth Senate Bill 480, which is for all those other cases that would be the 99 that don't fit, where the director would just simply waive the penalties and the fees.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that direction. We'll take it.
And words are sufficient.
They suffice for me.
Right.
Part of the record.
Any other comments, questions? So we'll save this one for Friday also and try to run them together just because they fit nicely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, I thought we were going to pass someone out, but we're not. What's that?
Oh, I was just going to say this to make sure we close the work session.
And let's do that. Close the work session on Senate Bill 32 and adjourn the Senate Revenue Committee.